Today I want to continue our discussion, consideration of man and machines, with some attention to the interaction between them as well as the differences between them. And I'm talking largely on the basis of two books, so far as I am talking on the basis of anything definite other than just the general discourse about such matters. The one is on the reading list. It's a book by Wiener entitled The Human Use of Human Beings. Wiener is the man who wrote the book Cybernetics. This is a later book in which he tries to relate the science of cybernetics, the implications of cybernetic machines, and development to society. I think it is a very provocative book, and he uses a framework that enables him to highlight some of what I would regard as the very most important issues of our time or any time. There's another book that I am talking from somewhat called Thinking by Machine, by D. Lattil. Thinking by Machine. This is one of the, I think, better books about the mechanisms that have been developed to compute, to perform actions based on the feedback principle, to control operations. He has in the back of the book a table, the headings for which I have on the board. In which he compares series of machines, kinds of machines, tools. He breaks them down to nine different kinds based on the complexity, based on these headings and what he writes under the headings. And I will try to tell you enough about this so that we might be able to think about it a little bit. He includes in the last three of these types are the human being, but he is trying to differentiate degrees of function. And he includes machines, possible machines, in these levels also. And he begins with the simple tools such as the lever, the hammer, pliers, and scissors, and the limitation of these, of a tool of this type, is that the tool cannot act by itself. The human being can act by itself. The more complex machines can act by themselves. The components of action that are controlled by the tool, by the effector, as Lattil calls it, is only one, the aptitude for the activity. That is, it is designed for the activity. And he calls that controlled by the effector, and I think that's a rather peculiar use of the word controlled. But all of the other possible components of action are not controlled by the effector, but in the human being they are, and in some of the more complex tools or machines, some or all of these might be, all of them in possibly conceivable machines. Now, these components of action are the material for the activity, there was too much of this to put on slides. I couldn't figure out a way to to do this without disorganizing you. The slides are rather little, so I'll try to do it, I think, more adequately by telling you about it against the background of those main headings. The material for the activity, the power of the activity, this is supplied by some source, of course usually a person, that is external to the pliers or the scissors, but the human being can supply the power for his own activity, and some of the more complex machines do this. The end goal of the activity is not controlled by the pliers or the scissors, but is by the human being. The determinism of the activity. Another word for this might be decision making as you go along, or the patterning, the fashioning. The opportunity for activity. This may or may not be controlled by the tool, by the machine, by the person. Potentially, this, however, can be controlled by the person, by the human being. The activity itself. He distinguishes this from all these other things he said. The coordination of a number of activities, all carried on at once, and finally the stabilization of the activity, as in the homeostatic functions of the human body, stabilization of one function in relation to other functions, to maintain a whole that is coordinated or balanced in relation to the functions being performed. Now, under the efficiency and sensitivity and the limitations, you have nothing but a limitation for tools of the simple kind. Let's go to another kind of tool. For instance, typewriter key, piano key. Grinding mill. Let's go on down to some of the. These are tools he calls first degree. I should have it over here. First degree. Of complexity developed. And the next category he has, for instance, clockwork instruments. Calculating machines, the kind you operate by hand. Next one, you have automatic fire alarms and other things like that. Automatic obstacle detectors. Electric eye kind of machine. You can detect something which breaks the light beam. That's the type of thing. Now those are the classical machines. And then following that, we have the beginning of what we call cybernetic machines. Well, these simple machines of the first and second and third degrees of complexity the very simplest, they have a limitation that they cannot act by themselves. The next kind, and the point to me in talking this way, in talking in terms of this type of analysis, is to get a better sense of what there is that is distinctive in the way of a difference between human being and the machines that he creates. And also, having developed a language like this for talking about machines and about the differences among them in terms of the order of the complexity and the differences in the versatility of them and their functions, you have a language which you can use to some degree then for talking about the differences among persons or among behaviors of the same person. This is another one of these languages we develop for talking, for evaluating ourselves and each other. The typewriter key, the grinding mill, the efficiency of the machine is defined by the fact that it executes a simple action. And that's the limit of the efficiency. The sensitivity is very limited to one stimulus, one kind of stimulus. And it cannot adapt its activity to circumstances. The limitation of the machine is it can't adapt to circumstances. Now you can think of forms of human behavior to which you could apply perhaps the same kind of statements. These machines not only have aptitude for the activity, they're designed for it, but they perform activity. The pliers does not perform activity. You have to, everything, the grinding mill does something once you have operated it. And I suppose in a primitive sense you could say that the pliers do too, they hold or they cut perhaps. But the activity is completely limited to the application of power by an external source. There is a certain amount of what you could call momentum to a key that has been struck or to a mill that has been turned. But all the other parts of the action, components of action, are not under the control of the instrument. Well, now we go on down, and as we add, as we go down or up to higher orders of machines, we add things in the column that are under the control of the effector, and we decrease, that is, we shift things from the column not under control of the effector to the column under the control of the effector, and the efficiencies become more highly developed, the sensitivities become greater, the limitations become less severe. For example, the automatic fire alarm uh, the efficiency, the effector acts in certain circumstances. The sensitivity, the effector is able to react to certain stimuli selected by its deterministic plan. It's set to go off under certain circumstances. It incorporates a certain kind of primitive programming, you see. The limitation is that the effector cannot adapt the activity to circumstances beyond its deterministic plan. Think for a moment, let's take time out to think of what we're talking about in terms of child rearing. What are your objectives in bringing up a child? What kind of weight do you give to what you call obedience? And how do you think of obedience in relation to something like this deterministic plan of the fire alarm? You want the child to be absolutely efficient under certain set circumstances and not be able to adapt to circumstances beyond his deterministic plan, beyond the training that you have given him, the rights and the wrongs and the do's and the don'ts that you have laid down? Or do you want a child to go beyond this deterministic plan? How mechanistic do you want your child to be? This is a rather good definition when you spell it all out, I think, of the term mechanistic. The limitations are what can be controlled by, that is, what can be controlled, the components of action that are controlled by the fire alarm itself, according to Littell. Not only the aptitude for the activity, but it also controls the order, the sequence, the coordination of the several activities performed. And he says it controls the opportunity for activity. Well, only in the sense that it is set to go off. And so certain kinds of circumstances provide the opportunity, but only because of the deterministic plan of the machine. But it does not control the material for the activity, the power of activity, the end goal, or the determinism, or the stabilization. Now you go down to the next order, and you get to the simple cybernetic machines. And what is introduced here? This is the fourth degree. And examples that he gives here are the governor, the Watt governor that we talked about last time, the governor on the motor. The Watt, if you want to know the name of the man who developed it. The automatic pilot. He has some other examples here, but let's don't clutter it up. With this type of a machine, like the governor, now you have more of the components of action controlled by the machine. One way we talk about this is, for instance, in terms of the degrees of freedom. When we talk about human behavior, we tend to use that term. The efficiency of the governor, it stabilizes its own activity. Remember the knobs on the governor fly around and they rise as they go faster, as the motor goes faster and turns the spindle faster. The knobs fly around faster until they level off and they may go to a point that is set. There's programming to this too. So that it turns off the gasoline, or somehow it affects the throttle. And so this is a regulating device, a self-regulating device. Again, it has only the sensitivity, or the sensitivity of the machine is such that the operative stimuli, speed of the motor, only modifies the effect without modifying the determinism. That is, it's a limited plan, it's a limited function. But the effector is so sensitive to its own activities. And here we begin to get something that sounds rather human. And the limitation again is that the effector can act only in accordance with a single determinism, with the limited plan. And stabilization of the activity has been added to the components that it can control, that are controlled by the machine. Now we go on into the kinds of systems that are more human, are much more highly developed as machines. And he talks in the book about some special kinds, special machines that have never been developed for any kind of practical use, but they have been developed for theoretical exhibit or demonstration. There's one called Ashby's homeostat. This was a Scotsman who developed a machine that simply maintains a piece of metal on a balance. Under a very great variety of external conditions, it maintains the balance through a balance of forces which involve a magnet, and it is a rather remarkable machine because it can maintain the balance on the pivot under under a pretty remarkable range of conditions. Now this type of a machine has more efficiency. He said, here you begin to get goal seeking. I mean, there's a behavior which is more or less continuous directed toward a goal, keeping the stick balanced. And this begins to resemble something very much like persistent, continuous, organized human behavior directed toward a goal. We get beyond this kind of thing, and you soon get into the human levels where machines so far have not gone, but we might argue about whether it would ever be possible to develop machines that would do this, these things. There are machines with multiple activities but so far all the machines developed can only act within the limits of the programming, within the limits of the predetermined plan that has been designed for them. This is perhaps the most obvious point of difference between the machine and the human being. You get to the level of the human being, and now under efficiency and sensitivity, you find this kind of statement. The effector modifies its own sensitivity and efficiency. There is a limitation. The effector can only act on the material given to it. The highest level, the effector creates the material it needs. On which it acts. At the highest level, all of the entries are in the control column. The aptitude for the activity, the coordination of several activities, opportunity for action, stabilization of activity, determinism of activity, end goal of activity, power of activity, and the material for activity. All under the control of the effector. This may be a little beyond the human. Latil uses as an example for this a theory of the creation or the formation of the system of the universe as we know it, according to which there was a mechanism of auto-creation. And he uses this kind of an example to illustrate what he described as the highest level of organization for mechanisms. Well, I think it's an interesting kind of an approach to the basic question of what does it mean to be human? And what is the difference between a human being and a machine? Now there is a further aspect to this whole question. The human being stands in a peculiar relationship to machines, in that he creates the machines. And the question arises as to what is the effect on man of the machines that he creates. Wiener has a point of view about this. Let me read you first the fundamental paragraph near the beginning of the book. It is the thesis of this book that society can only be understood through a study of the messages and the communication facilities which belong to it. Society can only be understood through a study of the messages and the communication facilities that belong to it. And that in the future development of these messages and communication facilities, messages between man and machines, and between machines and man, and also between machine and machine, are destined to play an ever-increasing part. Having created the machines we have created, we must now learn to talk with them, to communicate with them. And Luna goes on to say, I don't know whether I can put my finger on it, that having created machines, we now have the problem of the possibility that we will become enslaved to them. And I would like to wonder for a moment with you about that. As he points out, the last 400 years are so different from the preceding period of human history that it makes almost no sense to think of our time as being only different in degree. As he says, a lethal dose of strychnine is only different in degree too from a non-lethal dose. What does it mean to say that something is only different in degree? And almost always when people say this, they use the word only, as though a difference in degree is not very, very important after all. It's just a difference in degree. Degree of what? Well, this type of thing that we have been talking about, for one thing, these machines, these mechanisms, are organized systems, are only different in degree. But I think there's a whale of a difference between a computer and a pair of pliers. It's only a difference in degree, of course. I think there's a whale of a difference between a human being and a computer. I mean, of course, it's only a difference in degree. But what Wiener says is that the difference in degree is so great that it becomes hazardous to continue to apply the same kind of social principles and economic principles and philosophical principles, ethical principles, which were developed and which were apparently somehow well fitted to those earlier times. Because with the machines, we have affected our environments to such a degree that one of the ways to be unintelligent these days is to act as though we haven't. When you try to classify the machines that we have done this with, it seems useful to classify them partly this way into communication machines. Everything from the printing press to television, Telstar, radio, and the new machines we use for data processing, for information processing. These are communication machines too. And they're often plugged in to communication systems. the American Telephone Telephone and Telegraph Company provides much of the network for these machines to function in. They are part of our whole communication system. And as a result of that communication system, we must react to each other much more immediately. I heard 2 days ago a fantastic story about a man in California who sold a herd of cattle one morning for $12,000 and took his money in the form of a draft drawn on the Wells Fargo Company. He went to cash the check by the draft. By the time he got to the office, Wells Fargo Company had gone into partial bankruptcy, and they would not cash it. And they were sending orders out to their offices to close down their banking operations. He got on a horse. He bought one horse after another. He rode to Oregon. It was 700 miles. He rode as fast as every horse could ride. Now and then he would take an hour out to sleep. He made it in something like 5 or 6 days and got to Portland and got into the office and got his money. They hadn't got word yet. And as he came out of the office, he heard the whistles or horns of the boat coming into harbor with the news. And look how different it was from where it is now. The enormous change in the environment. It's very hard to imagine. I don't think we've begun to understand this. We still talk as though the nations of the world were miles apart. They're not even seconds apart anymore. In fact, it becomes more and more difficult to think in functional terms about nations. They're so, they have, the whole notion has become anachronistic in relation to the change that has been made by the machines we have developed which affect communication. The transportation machines are almost as, and in their own way, they are equally important. The speed with which we transport ourselves and materials is not quite as great as the speed with which we are able to transmit messages. But there is no longer any real problem about the time it takes to get anywhere if you have to go. So that all of the parts of our value system, all of the aspects of our customs and our policies of government, which depended for their importance upon the distances that were involved before we developed these new machines, have now become outdated, irrelevant. We need a kind of test or index that has not yet been developed. It would probably be much more important than the intelligence test or any other that we have developed, and it would be test or index, a measure, an instrument that would help you to determine the year or the century, perhaps, in which you are living. What did you do today, and what did you say today that you could have said in the year 2000 BC? What did you say today that could not have been said 10 years ago? What did you do today that you would very probably not have done, not have been able to do, or would have had no motivation to do 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago? Where are you living in time? How much of your day do you spend in the 20th century? How much of your day do you spend in the 11th century or the first, or back in the Pleistocene, perhaps? Well, we don't have a test, but you can think, you can wonder, you can try to evaluate what you're doing, what you're saying, what you're thinking in relation to the chains that we have created in our world by the machines we have created. And you can be asking yourself whether what you are saying and what you are thinking and what you are doing is any longer appropriate. What's today, Wednesday? Well, Merry Christmas.